We're doing Chabakuk. We're up to, it's called the third chapter, the 11th Pasuk. And Chabakuk has been recounting Jewish history. He says, is it God's wrath that dried up the Jordan? Is it God's wrath that dried up the Yam Suf? No, it isn't. It's the fact that Hashem wanted us to cross the Jordan at that time. It's because we were worthy of it, so we merited it. And we saw last week, Ra'ucha Yachilu Harim, the mountains, the leaders of Israel, the kings that were here when we entered, they are called the mountains, they trembled in fear as Hashem led us into the land of Israel. It's as though God lifted His hand all the way to the heavens to show His might as He led us into the land of Israel. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Shemesh yareyach amad zevulah leor chitzecha yalechu lenoga berak chanitecha. Shemesh yareyach, the sun and the moon, amad zevulah, they stopped in their path. Leor chitzecha yalechu, because the nation went in the shine of your arrows, as though God was shooting in front of them as they advanced into the land of Israel, and God's arrows were so sharp that their gleam shined. So the O Chitzecha Yaleichu, to the light of the shine of your arrows, we advanced into the land of Israel. Lenoga Berak Chanitecha, to the shine of the of your spear, of your chanit. Bizam titzadaretz de'af tadush goyim. With your anger, you trample over the nations of the land of Israel. With your anger, you step on the nations. Yatzata liyesha amecha liyesha et mishichecha. You went out, and this is what you constantly do to save your people. Liyesha et mishichecha. To save your anointed one. Who is his anointed one? Is it talking about the period of Shaul and David? Is it talking about the period of Chizkiyahu, where Hashem went out and defeated the Assyrian forces that were camped around the gates? Machatz tarosh mi beit rasha arot yesodat tzavar sela. Hashem, you destroyed the heads of the house of the wicked, machatz tarosh mi bet rasha, meaning you destroyed the leaders and the people of Sancheriv with the nation with the angel that went out in the middle of the night and defeated them. Arot, which means to reveal, yisodad tzavar sela, you revealed their foundation. That's a way of saying you uncovered them, you made them vulnerable. Ad tzavar, till the throat, and the throat is always the vulnerable part. That's what's easiest to slice with a knife and kill a person. You want to hit him in the head, so that it's a hard skull. You want to hit him in the stomach, he's got the ribs. The neck is easy to slice. So as far as taking on the enemy, the Navi describes as arot yisod, you uncovered their foundations ad tzavar, to the neck, the place where they are most vulnerable, sela, and this is for eternity that you revealed the foundation of the Assyrian Empire, and they were defeated, and that's it, it's over. Now the truth is that the word sela has multiple meanings. There's a machloket rishonim what the word sela means. The standard understanding is that this is true for eternity. That's the standard interpretation. That's what most Mefarshim assume it means. Others say that the word Sela is a term that's used for song. It connotes where they should change the pitch in the song. And we will see at the end of Chavakuk, he says, Lamnatzech bin ginotai, that what I've said until now, seemingly this last chapter, at least from here on in the last chapter, is a song that the Levites were supposed to sing in the temple, what we're reading here. And then Sela would fit over here, that it's connoting a pitch or a way of singing. Oh, right. So there are places in davening where it certainly does not seem to connote a pitch, right? It certainly seems to be with that interpretation of this is true for eternity. There's a third interpretation in the Mefarshim, which says that Sela means period. And this is the way it's going to be. It's a way of giving validity. It's like what today we'd say, period. Like, there's no further discussion on this point. That's it. And then Sela works better also in Birchos Kriyashma, we say. So those are three of the interpretations of the commentaries in the beginning of Tehillim, Perek Gimel, where the word Sela appears for the first time. You have the commentaries discussing what it means. So here, two of the interpretations, all three, I guess, work. You'll notice that the first and the third are very similar. This is true forever and period, like a validation of its truth. So, Pasuk Yud Dalet. Nakavta v'matav rosh perazav. You made holes in his staff. He was coming to rule over us, and you made holes in his staff, in his rulership. Rosh perazav, the heads of his army, and the army is referred to as perazav. Perazav literally means the people who live in unfortified cities. Perazi, like we have in the Megillah, means an unfortified city or an inhabitor of an unwalled city, an open city, which is an indication of strength. It's also an indication of large numbers. They can't fit within the walls. So the description here is how Hashem destroyed the enemy, and the enemy is described as being powerful, so they could live in cities that are without a wall, and as being great in their number, and that's why they live in a city without a wall. So the Navi says, Nakavta, you made holes, Vimatav, in his staff, in his steps, Rosh Pirazav, the heads of his multitude of armies. That's how Pirazav, although it means dwellers of unwalled cities, over here it really means multitudes of powerful armies. Yis'aru lahafitzeini. And they were coming down, they were swooping down upon me with the thought of scattering me. The goal of the Assyrian Empire, when they attacked, was to exile the people from Judean territory and scatter them around the world. Ali tzutam kmo lechol ani bamistar. Alitzutam, their happiness, ultimately ended up with kmo le'echol ani, as they thought they would consume the poor. They were sure they would wipe us out, bamistar, and they wanted to wipe them out in the desert, and he's comparing them, kimo, meaning what happened with the Assyrian Empire, is just like those who wanted to consume the poor in hiding, out in the desert. Who's he referring to? He's referring to last week's parsha. The Egyptians chased the Jewish people out to the desert. They figured over there we'll make mass murder, we'll make mass graves of the Jews. No one will be able to hold it against us. We're chasing after runaway slaves. We'll kill as many as we want, and no one will be able to take us to task over it. And who ultimately was destroyed? The Egyptian empire that was chasing us. So the Navi says, the Assyrian empire that came to destroy us became kimo. They became like that nation that thought le'echol ani b'mistar, to consume the impoverished in hiding. That's a code for the Egyptian empire, who thought they would destroy us, the impoverished nation, so to speak, in hiding, where the other inhabitants of Egypt wouldn't be able to bear testimony. And if you're wondering, who did the Egyptians have to give answers to? We see from Chazal time and again that they did. We see on the Egyptians, on the Romans, even on Ahasuerus. When Ahasuerus wanted to annihilate us, he was concerned. He told Haman, I can't just get away with it. Haman had to tell him, well, they're scattered among the people, you just make an authorized pogrom, it's not one nation you're going out against, people won't hold it against you, everyone hates the Jew. But Ahasuerus didn't think he could just get away with it. And the same thing with the Egyptians. When they wanted to put us in servitude, so the Talmud discusses how they discussed politically, how can we get away with it? How they had to slowly demonize us. Slowly. Till they reached the point where they could throw our babies to the Nile, and even then, there were there were limitations on how much they could get away with, as far as how much the Egyptian people would let them get away with. Darachta vayam susecha. Yeah. It seems that way, yeah. Fine. Okay, maybe that's right. I hear. You hear what he's saying? Okay. The Midrash says that when Moshe came to ask Paro that Hashem sent him, it's time to let the Jews go. So Paro made it worse. He made the Jews go and collect their own stalks of hay in order to make the mortar. So Midrash says, what was Hashem planning then? Why did it have to happen this way? The Midrash says what happened was the Jew would he knew he needed hay for tomorrow to make the mortar. Where is he going to get hay from? So Jews started crawling on all fours into Egyptian fields to start collecting hay. The Egyptian would come out and look at his field and see a Jew crawling in his field trying to collect hay so that he can make the mortar tomorrow the way Paro ordered him. And the Egyptian would bring out clubs and start beating the Jew. And he'd break his feet. And the Jew wouldn't even be able to come home. Now he'd be crawling on all fours because he couldn't walk. And Moshe saw this. That's why Moshe came back to Hashem and said, why'd you send me? It only got worse since he sent me. So the Midrash says, well, what was Hashem thinking? Why did Hashem have it work out this way? So the Midrash says that had Yetzias Mitzrayim occurred right away, had the Ten Makos begun right away when Moshe came, then the Egyptians would have made a claim. What do you want from us? We were just following orders. Pharaoh said, so what were we supposed to do? Risk our lives for them. So Hashem made it that the Jews would be crawling into the private field of the Egyptian, where Paro actually told them, you guys better collect your own hay. So they were doing something which wasn't in contradiction really to what Paro wanted. And no one gave the Egyptian a right to beat the Jew. But the Egyptian didn't want the Jew crawling around this field. So he took advantage of the situation, picked up clubs, and started beating the Jews in his field. Then Hashem said, okay, now I can start the Makos. Now that you've proven that you have no more claim to say, well, we were just following orders, we were just doing Pyro said, it's your own wickedness.
Aren't there castle laws in Judaism?
What are castle laws?
If you trespass and steal, the owner has the right to...
But it belonged to Pharaoh.
What?
Nobody had private fields except
for the priests. Well, so the rabbi says private fields.
Oh. Well, they lived there, they worked those fields. I don't know the details of how it worked, but I'm just saying when you discuss the nations and their decency or indecency, so you see that this was also factored in by Hashem, that there was a point of showing where they were holding in the whole picture. Pasuk Tetvav, Darachta Bayam Susecha Chomer Mayim Rabim. When the Egyptians came into the sea, so then it's as though you trampled them with your horse. Chomer Maim Rabin. Chomer is like a pile. Chomarim Chomarim. It's piles, piles. Chomer Maim Rabin. You came down upon them. You fought them with a pile of tremendous water that came crashing down upon them. Shamati Vatirgaz bitni lekol tzalelu sifatai yavo rakav ba'atzamai v'tachtai yirgaz. And the Navi is now concluding his prophecy, and he's discussing something that struck him, that gave him great fear. He says, I heard, and my stomach got scared, meaning what's in my stomach, my heart got scared. Lekol, when I heard about it, Salilu sifatai. So then my lips trembled. Yavo hakav ba'atzamai. And it's as though out of worry, my bones started rotting. V'tachtai ergaz. And wherever I am worried. Asher anuach liyom tzara la'alot le'am yegudenu. What am I worried about? What is this that I heard? What I heard is, asher anuach, that I will come to the place where I anticipate that I will be able to rest. I will again make the ascent into the land of Israel. Le'yom tzara. And I see, says Habakkuk, that the ascent back into the land of Israel is really setting us up for another day of tzaros, another day of suffering. La'alot le'am yegudenu. As the nation of Gog will come up in their troops to attack us, we will have battalions ascending into the land of Israel. The Navi began the book of Habakkuk with a query. He says, God, what's going on here? How could it be that the Jews are suffering, and how could it be that the wicked have it better than the righteous, and you let the wicked consume those that are more righteous than them? And then Hashem answered him. Hashem explained to him that there is a justice system, that there is ultimate punishment for the wicked, but that Israel are not clean from sin, and that they have to undergo what they have to undergo. And the Navi concludes his prophecy with a discussion of world history, Jewish history, that backs the concept. He discusses how when Hashem wanted us to succeed, we did succeed. It wasn't a coincidence that the Jordan suddenly dried up. It wasn't a coincidence that Kushan Rishasayim suddenly overtook us. These were all the acts of Hashem based on what we deserved and didn't deserve. And that's what's going to happen when the Jews are exiled from Israel the first time, as the Navi prophesied. And now in the conclusion of his prophecy, he says, I fear, I tremble, wherever I am worried, because I know that when we will again enter the land of Israel with anticipation of rest, when we will again enter the land of Israel, the place where theoretically we should find rest from our enemies, it is really setting us up for another catastrophe. Le'yom tzara. La'alot le'am yegudenu, as the nations of Gog will ascend with their battalions against the people of Israel in Israel. Ki te'ena lo tifrach ve'ein yevol bagefanim ki cheish ma'asei zayit ushdeimot lo asa ochel. He says it's going to be a point where the fig tree has not yet had time to blossom. The grapevines have not yet had time to give their fruits. The olive is still a liar, so to speak. The olive groves have not yet produced olives. Ushdeimot lo asa ochel. And the fields, the grains, have not yet given forth food. It's as though the Jewish people enter the land of Israel and they haven't yet had time to mature in the land of Israel. Before they have time to bear the fruits, like a fruit-bearing tree, before it has time to give its fruits, they will be attacked. Gazal mimichlatzon. The sheep are taken from their pen. Ve'ein bakal barfatim. And the cattle is taken out of its pen. The cattle is taken out of its corrals. So the Jewish people are described that they will enter the land of Israel, and then there are so few left to return. After everything that the Jewish people undergo in their exile, they're going to come back and it's going to be like, where are the sheep? The pen is empty. Where are the cattle? The corral is empty. How few are the Jews compared to their history? How much they should be and how few they really are. And so the Navi says, we will return to the land of Israel in anticipation of respite. We will return to the land of Israel hoping over here finally we should rest, and really we're being set up liyom tzara, for a worse catastrophe. And so the Navi says, everything else I've seen in Jewish history, everything else I can swallow. But that final war of Gog and Magog, that's something which doesn't leave me rest. Vani badonai eloza agila velohe yishi. But how can I maintain my happiness? Ani bashem eloza. My happiness is because my faith is in Hashem. The conclusion of the Navi who questioned Hashem, the conclusion of the Navi who asked, how could it be that the Jews are suffering, is a recognition. He says, I know it's going to get worse. I know that there's a long exile ahead of us, and I know that after that exile, that we still have surprises. But Agila, I can be happy Beloke Yishi with the God who He is my salvation. Elohim Adonai Cheli Vayasem Raglai Kayalot Val Bamotai Yadricheni Lam Natzeach Min Ginotai. He says it is Hashem, Elohim Hashem, although we are not great in our numbers, our salvation, our strength is Hashem. Vayasem Raglai Kayalot, He makes our feet swift like the rams. Val bamotai adricheni, and He gives me the capacity to step on the mountains of the enemies, that Hashem allows us to defeat the enemies, even though the enemies surround us, and even though the enemies are looking down, they're towering over us. But Hashem gives us the capacity to overcome them. Lam natzeach bin yinotai. This, says Chavakuk, should be a prayer that's instituted for the Levites who conduct the song in the temple. They should conduct this song as well. And that's how the Navi concludes. Lam netzeach bin ginotai. My song is before, another understanding is that Lam netzeach bin ginotai, he says, my song is ultimately before the great conductor. His whole question was, God, how are you conducting this world? So he concludes, he says, Lam natzeach, to the great conductor, bin ginotai, I give my songs, because I recognize at the conclusion of my work, I recognize that there's a hand and there's a reason and there's a logic and a rhyme and a reason. And so I conclude this song. I conclude with singing, a singing of praise in honor of Hashem who I questioned. Okay, Mazal Tov, we finished Chavakuk. We begin the book of Tzfanya. Devar Adonai Asher Haya El Tzfanya Ben Kushi Ben Gedalia Ben Amaria Ben Chizkia Bime Yoshiyahu Ben Amon Melech Yehuda. So the prophet is prophesizing in the days of Yoshiyahu, a very righteous king. And the trouble is that as righteous as he is, the decree of exile for the Jewish people has been sealed. And it is not overturned. As righteous as Yoshiyahu is, the Navi says that there was never a king like him who repented before Hashem with all his heart and all his soul and all his strength in accordance with the whole Torah. Nonetheless, the prophecy and the decree of exile is waiting, it's hanging over us. And that's what the Navi is going to discuss. Asof asef kol. Hashem discusses how He will destroy everything. Me'al pnei ha'adama nu'um Hashem. From upon the face of the earth, Hashem says. And the Navi will take us through the description of the destruction of many nations, not only Israel, but the Navi will conclude with the rebuilding of Zion, of how Hashem will re-enter Zion and collect us back into Zion, and we will be praised among the nations of the land as Hashem returns us to the land, as we will witness Be'ezrat Hashem.